This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. New questions arise today about several types of medicine commonly used to treat the pain of arthritis. In September, Vioxx was pulled off the market after studies showed higher rates of heart problems. 4 days ago, similar concerns arose about another prescription painkiller, Celebrex. It's not off the market, but its manufacturer, Pfizer, announced that Celebrex ads have been pulled. Then yesterday, the Food and Drug Administration reported on a study on naproxen, the drug used in the popular over-the-counter painkiller Aleve. The study shows increased risk of heart attacks and strokes. All these medications are anti-inflammatories of one kind or another, good for arthritis patients because they reduce swelling. But these new concerns about side effects raise issues about other inflammatories, including ibuprofen, the drug used in Advil. These issues about pain management and arthritis also emerge at the same time that doctors who treat migraines and cancer worry they may face prosecution if they prescribe stronger painkillers like OxyContin. Later in the program, a test pilot's view of pilot Howard Hughes. But first, pain management. For the first part of our program, we'll focus on questions and concerns surrounding arthritis drugs. How do doctors and patients weigh the risks and benefits? How does daily relief from pain compared to the possibility of a heart attack down the road? A little later, we'll switch focus to talk about patients' fears of drug addiction and doctors' fears of prosecution. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN at NPR.org. Joining us to begin here in Studio 3A is NPR Health Editor Joe Neal. Thanks very much for coming in, Joe.
Hello, Neil.
So doesn't all of this, in a way, go back to those studies about Vioxx, the drug that was pulled off the shelves last September?
Yes, it all originates with that. There have been, as we know, there have been several years of hints that Vioxx may increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes, and there's been some evidence that the company knew about this at a point where it probably should have taken the action that it did sooner, but we'll leave that to the historical debate. But yes, what we're finding out now about the new drugs did originate with the finding that Vioxx increased heart attacks, and that is because these drugs are all basically working in a very similar way on inflammation.
So with that information about Vioxx, there was good reason to say, hey, we'd better look into any studies that involve Celebrex, a very similar drug.
That's right. And there, I think I read yesterday there are about three dozen studies being conducted by the National Institutes of Health that involve Celebrex. Now, some of these are Celebrex and a placebo. And as we learned yesterday, one of them was Celebrex and naproxen, and placebo being used in a trial to try to see if either one of these drugs would prevent Alzheimer's. Now, there wasn't any suggestion that either of these drugs had any kind of risk of heart disease when the study started.
So this wasn't a safety survey?
No, it was not a safety study at all. In fact, it was a disease prevention study, and the people were taking these drugs to see if they might delay the onset of Alzheimer's. But once the Vioxx news came out, the review was initiated, and especially after the Celebrex news came out, they went back and looked at this particular study and found that Celebrex did not cause any heart problems at all in the Alzheimer's study, but there was this very slight increase in the risk of heart attacks and strokes for people who took naproxen, which we know is popularly known as Aleve, and it's also sold as a lot of generic, under a lot of generic names by various pharmacies, their house brands.
Now, all of these questions, and again, naproxen is an anti-inflammatory. It's a little different from those other drugs, and for one thing, it's over-the-counter. But this is now raising questions about all these kinds of anti-inflammatories, including ibuprofen, which is used for the drug in Advil.
That's right. There is very little evidence to suggest that ibuprofen has this kind of risk, although we do know that when ibuprofen and aspirin are used together, they stick on to this to different parts of the same inflammatory enzyme, and ibuprofen essentially inactivates the enzyme so that the protective effects of aspirin on the heart are wiped out, so you shouldn't take ibuprofen and aspirin together. I think it's too early to say what we know about ibuprofen. I just think we have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. And I would stress also that what we heard yesterday about naproxen was very preliminary, and that they were taking just a first look at the data, and the statistics suggested that there is a greater incidence of heart attacks and strokes, but it may well be after they really get down and crunch the numbers that there may actually not be a significant difference and naproxen will be cleared. I mean, it's who knows?
Who knows?
That is a possibility.
Well, it seems to raise questions, and some have raised them, not just me, about the quality of these studies.
That's right. Well, the requirements to get a drug onto the market are not what many people think. It takes only a few dozen or even a few hundred people to prove that a drug is safe. And then you have to prove effectiveness, and that generally is a 400, 500, 600 person trial. And then if all goes well in these small studies, the drug's on the market and the FDA approves it. And what happens next is the legacy of what's going on now. Very few studies are done to follow the effects when the drug is given to millions of people. And these drugs were marketed, Vioxx and Celebrex were marketed instantly to the entire American population over and over. So suddenly millions of people were in this big drug study. And we find that when millions of people are given the drugs, maybe so there are some problems that weren't known before.
Our number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's talk with David, who joins us from Denver, Colorado.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an internist, and I have a comment. By far, the most common type of arthritis is osteoarthritis. It's a type that affects the large joints, the hips, the knees, the shoulders. For the most part, it's a non-inflammatory condition. And so NSAIDs, whether they're COX-2 inhibitors or not, are not necessarily the best drugs to treat this type of arthritis. They do provide an analgesic pain-relieving effect. But the anti-inflammatory benefits, in a way, are sort of lost in osteoarthritis. So the loss of these drugs may not be the end of the world, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think many of your colleagues do prescribe them for arthritis patients of exactly the type you're describing.
They do. They're widely prescribed, and I do it myself. But I think everyone knows that that the anti-inflammatory benefit may be marginal for osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm. What are you hearing from your patients today, I wonder, David?
I have the day off, so it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow. But many of them are afraid to take any NSAID, well, any COX-2. And now that naproxen has been implicated, I suppose that they'll be afraid to take most of them.
May I jump in here? It's Joe Neal. When Vioxx was taken off the market, did you switch a lot of patients to Celebrex?
A few I did. Some were leery of taking it. I was a little nervous myself. The only information we had, a lot of the information we had was coming from the drug companies themselves. And, last I heard, Celebrex was safe, Baxter was safe, et cetera, et cetera. So sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Well,
I did it with caution.
Yeah, that's another point I would make, is that these studies that we're hearing about have not been published. They have not undergone the usual extensive review by other scientists. So I think it's going to take at least 3 or 4 months to sort out these things until the data are made public and doctors begin to be able to read about them in journals.
David, good luck with your voicemail and email when you finally get back to work.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Joe, he used a couple of words, NSAIDs and COX-2 inhibitors. What
are those?
Yeah.
NSAIDs are, it's the abbreviation for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, and that applies to everything from aspirin to Vioxx. Steroids, obviously, are the original anti-inflammatory drugs, and after steroids, these drugs began to be developed, and they're non-steroidals. COX-2 refers to the enzyme that is the target of attack of all of these drugs, but in particular, Vioxx, Celebrex, Bextra, and Mobic are selective for this enzyme and not the COX-1 enzyme, and that confers on them protective effects on the stomach and gastrointestinal system.
Now, all of this bad news about this category of anti-inflammatories, or possible bad news, we'll have to wait and see. But there was some good news, possibly, for arthritis sufferers, and a study on acupuncture.
That's right. That came out yesterday in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and If people want to find out more, it wasn't in a lot of papers today, but we did have a piece on All Things Considered last night, so people can go to npr.org and find it. That was about 570 osteoarthritis patients, and after about 14 weeks of acupuncture, they had a significant reduction in pain. Now, as our caller pointed out, these treatments, including acupuncture, aren't doing anything to control or cure the underlying disease. But in this case, people did get some pain relief, and it could be an alternative.
Though questions were raised about that study, too. At least one guy said it was a complete waste of money and time.
Yes, there is that view out there when it comes to alternative medicine.
Joe Neal, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Neal.
NPR Health Editor Joe Neal joined us in Studio 3A. And with us now is John Klippel, President and CEO of the Arthritis Foundation. He's with us from his home in Bald Head, North Carolina. We appreciate your time today, sir.
I'm pleased to be here.
These drugs we've been talking about are primarily used to treat arthritis pain. What do arthritis patients do now?
Well, I think one of the things that we just emphasized in the previous conversation is I think the news that we're learning about naproxen is very preliminary. And I think the stress is I don't really think that this has much impact at all on the clinical use of NSAIDs. We need to allow people, we need to see these data published. We need to allow experts to actually review these to learn what this actually means. I don't think it has any immediate impact on the use of these drugs.
Yet a lot of people are going to be extremely concerned once they see these stories in the newspaper or hear them on the radio.
Well, I think that's fair, but we need to recognize that that naproxen actually has been used now for 30 years. It's a very effective drug. Many people find it helpful in the relief of pain, and we shouldn't underestimate the magnitude of the problem that we're trying to deal with. So we talk about 70 million Americans affected with arthritis, and they're affected every day by pain. So drugs like naproxen and Celebrex and other NSAIDs really play a very important role in improving the quality of life of people who take these drugs.
Are there substitutes readily available?
Well, there are substitutes. I think we've talked about the use of pure analgesics or pain medications like acetaminophen or Tylenol. There are many NSAIDs, which we believe play a very useful role, but there are also other things that we think people don't pay enough attention to. Diet and exercise become very important, particularly for osteoarthritis. We learned this week about the potential role for acupuncture. We don't think enough attention is paid to things like particularly surgery for people who have very advanced or severe disease. So there are a lot of options available, and it's important that people ask and learn about these options.
Do you think a lot of osteopaths are hearing today from their patients?
Oh, I think physicians in general are hearing from their patients, and that actually started back in September when the news of Vioxx broke. So I think the attention around arthritis and the problem of arthritis and how one effectively treats it, that level of discussion has really increased over the last 3 months.
And one question before we go to the break, informationally, obviously a lot of people use some of these drugs for purposes other than arthritis. They don't necessarily take it every day. Are they at any risk, at least according to what these studies show, do you think?
Yeah, Neil, I think that's a fair question because we need to recognize that the news that was released last Friday on Celebrex and the news today was actually the medications were being used in people to prevent a problem. In one instance, cancer, and in another instance, Alzheimer's. So what this suggests is there is a possibility that the use of these drugs in anyone may cause a problem, and I would emphasize may. We don't actually know that yet.
We'll have more on this subject, more of your calls and emails after a short break. We're talking about arthritis pain at this point, 800-989-8255, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neal Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about the treatment of pain and taking your calls. How do doctors and patients now weigh the risks and benefits of pain-relieving drugs? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Still with us is John Klippel, President and CEO of the Arthritis Foundation. And let's get a caller on the line. And this is Tara, who's with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Yes, sir. I have very severe eczema, and I also have rheumatoid arthritis. And Vioxx was about the only pain medication on the market which did not cause me to bleed severely through my skin. So now that it's been removed from the market, I basically have no way to treat my pain. And my doctor says that when the prescription is gone, he'll put me on complete disability. But, you know, I'm only in my 30s, and quite frankly, having some future heart difficulties versus being disabled for another 30 or 40 years?
Yeah. John Klippel, Tara's not the only one asking that question today.
No, so let me just applaud Kara, because I think the consumer hasn't had a voice in this discussion, in that Kara's dealing with a very severe disease in which a medication that she found helped has been withdrawn. And the person who's affected by that is Kara. And so I think we spent a lot of time talking about risk, and that's fully justified. On the other hand, we haven't talked enough about benefit, and we certainly haven't heard from consumers. There are certainly many people who would be willing to accept the risk of a drug if they knew that it was helping them, particularly if they have a very severe form of arthritis like rheumatoid arthritis.
Mm-hmm. So any discussions with your doctor other than complete disability, Tara?
Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any other drug that doesn't cause the same problem, and I know there's at least a couple other people in his practice that have the same difficulty.
All we can do is wish you the best of luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
Here's an email question. You may have already answered this, but I think many people would appreciate knowing on all these alerts what the actual risk is. Vioxx increases risks 2.5 times. 2.5 times what? Is the risk still 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000? The actual risk rate is never discussed. That from Adrian Fuller in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's a great question, because we hear about the fact that it's increased by X amount, 2 or 3. What we don't know, are we talking about 1 in 10,000, 1 in 1,000,000, 1 in 5,000,000? And in fact, that's the real question. When the consumer begins to understand what risk they're willing to accept, it's not that the risk has been doubled, it's what's the chance that they will in fact get this versus the number of people who take the drug. That data has not been discussed or presented.
Well, Dr. Klippel, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
John Klippel is President and CEO of the Arthritis Foundation and joined us from his home in Bald Head, North Carolina. And with us now is Marie Griffin, Professor of Preventative Medicine at Vanderbilt University. She joins us by phone from her office at Vanderbilt, and very, very good of you to be with us today, too.
Thank you, Neil.
We were talking with John Klippel, and he reminds us of the problem that many of these drugs address, and that they're very good at that, and that there's been, you know, they've been on the market a fair amount of time, certainly naproxen. I know that you feel that we have to be thinking about the concerns as well.
Right. I mean, I think we have to weigh the risks and benefits. And I think people with severe arthritis are a group of people dealing with chronic pain. And those types of people may be willing to take more risk if they're getting substantial benefit from these drugs. On the other hand, the sort of market, the number of people who use these drugs every day for sometimes minor pains, has really expanded. And there are a lot of people who will say, well, I'm not really sure if it's helping me, or, well, I started it because I had a sore hip or I had a sore knee, but, you know, I don't really need it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a misperception among a lot of people that the drugs are preventing the arthritis from getting worse or doing more than they really do.
So I think a lot of people are going to be calling their doctors today to discuss their medication. That's one of the questions they should be asking?
Right. I think that that's the first thing. How much is it really helping you? And I think a lot of people will say, well, gee, I'm not really sure that it's still making a difference in my life, and I'm going to try doing without this. Now, obviously, someone with severe arthritis who has pain every day, they're a different group of people. But there are people who take these medicines every day who may not be getting a whole lot of benefit from it.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. And Carol joins us from Tucson, Arizona.
No. Hello.
Hello.
About a year ago, I was taking Bextra because of hip pain. And I was going to be moving within the area. And I took the Bextra for a couple months. And after that, upon my annual physical, they found what they thought was a murmur. And then it turned out, after echocardiogram, to be a diastolic dysfunction, as they call it, and the one ventricle does not squeeze out like it should.
Mm-hmm. Now, you
I wonder if, after Bextra for about 2 months.
Well,
quit.
Professor Griffin, you had a letter about Bextra in the recent issue of the New England Journal of Medicine.
Right, we did. We felt that there were now two studies out there showing an increased risk of heart attacks and strokes with Bextra. And that there, we needed more information on safety of this drug before we felt like it was good for most consumers to use this drug.
It's a drug similar to Celebrex, as I understand.
Right, and similar to Vioxx. They're basically, three of these drugs have been on the market. There was concern early on that these drugs could increase the risk of clotting, increase the risk of heart attack and strokes. And once we saw that, with Vioxx, the suspicion about the other two drugs was raised a little bit higher, and now we have studies with the other two drugs showing the same type of thing. So it is a concern, and I think we need to be cautious about the use of these drugs.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you use the drug and stop several months ago, there's no evidence at this point that should be a continuing problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I raised this question with the doctor. He thought it was maybe from the high blood pressure.
I think
that's uncontrolled, and I don't know.
Well, Carol, I'm not sure we can
diagnose
you over the radio, but
right. Well, thank you for your help.
We appreciate the phone call, Carol.
Yeah, Neil, I think it is important that all of these drugs, the old ones as well as the new ones, can interfere with blood pressure control, and that's an important reason why people who take these drugs should be under the care of a healthcare provider and should have their blood pressure checked.
One difference between Bextra and Celebrex is that I don't know the words to the Bextra jingle. I do know all the words to the Celebrex jingle.
Yeah. Well, Celebrex has been on the market for several more years and has had a bigger market share. So there are a lot more people currently taking Celebrex, yes.
And there's all this confusion. I mean, do people listen to the FDA, to their doctor, to the TV commercials?
Right. Well, they won't be listening to the commercial anytime soon because I guess they've stopped the advertising now.
Marie Griffin, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Marie Griffin, professor of preventative medicine at Vanderbilt University, with us by phone from her office at Vanderbilt. And with us now is Scott Fishman, president-elect of the American Academy of Pain Medicine. He's also the chief of pain medicine at the University of California at Davis, and he's with us by phone from his office at UC Davis. And it's good of you to be with us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And we really wanted to broaden out the discussion from the specific treatment of arthritis pain with these drugs, and their side effects have now been called into question, but about the treatment of pain in general and undertreatment of pain. That's a major concern, isn't it?
Undertreatment of pain is a major public health crisis that's occurring across the United States, and there are many, many different barriers to patients getting good pain relief. So we're very concerned about how we're interpreting all of these emerging issues, like the debate about anti-inflammatories now, as well as debates about whether patients who get treated will become addicted to their medicines, for instance, the Rush Limbaugh story and things of that sort. Bottom line is that pain is still grossly undertreated in America, and that's a shame because we have great tools to be able to treat it.
And in the arthritis case, before we leave that issue, this is pretty much a treatment of pain. There is no treatment for the disease of osteoarthritis.
In general, that's true, that most of our treatment strategies focus on symptom management. So, yes, we are focusing on treating the symptoms of the disease, which in some ways become the disease itself. So chronic pain is really an example where a symptom becomes a disease state, where an alarm system that normally is protective now in and of itself, because it's going off all the time and won't turn off, becomes the disease itself.
The chronic pain. Yeah.
Yes.
Let's get another caller in on the conversation. Jeremy joins us from Tucson, Arizona. Hello, Jeremy. Are you there? One more time. Jeremy. Jeremy has left us, and let's try instead to talk with Chip, who's calling from Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi. I got a quick question. I've got arthritis and fibromyalgia, and the COX-2 inhibitors are the only things that have seemed effective that are non-narcotic. So I was on Vioxx. They took it off the market. Now I'm on Bextra. As long as you could get checked out to find out there's no adverse results, I'd still like to be able to make my own decision to keep taking them so I don't have to go to narcotics. I'd like some feedback on that.
Go ahead.
Yes, your point is very well taken and very well articulated, Chip. The issue, as even Dr. Griffin had said earlier, is that this is a risk-benefit analysis issue. And the point that I would like to make to the listeners is that when someone has pain, there is no risk-free option, including doing nothing. So what we're doing is really balancing the risks and choosing the one that is most optimal or acceptable. You're right that if someone stays on these medications, they need to be monitored and watched for these side effects. With that, I can't assure you that some of the adverse effects would be monitorable. That is, if there were an effect on the heart that would increase the chance of a heart attack, we might perhaps not be able to know that, and that's a question that still needs to be researched. So we don't know that yet. But we also know that when someone has chronic pain and they're dysfunctional, that there is enormous collateral damage on their health and on their well-being that almost makes life not worth living. And it sounds to me like you have probably had that experience. And when you find something that gives you relief, it's a worthy trade-off. So this is something that doctors do with their patients every day. We work with patients as their consultants. We present to them the risks and the benefits of treatments, and the patients and the doctors choose the most appropriate care.
At what level of risk does the government say this is unacceptable? I mean, obviously, patients and doctors can say, you know, if it's 1 in 10,000, hey, I'll take the risk. But if it's how high does the risk have to be before the government just says, no, you can't do
it? Well, I mean, you raise an interesting question, because in some places the government has intervened and said the risk is too much. In others, they don't. Consider when someone has cancer and we give them chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is essentially poison. And we hope that the poison poisons the bad cells more than the good cells, but we always know there's spillover. And sometimes we actually harm patients more than we help them. But we know that if we do nothing, in many of these cases, much greater harm will occur, and even death will occur. So we're willing to take that risk. When someone is in chronic pain, because it's a qualitative, not a quantitative, reduction in health, meaning that it impairs our quality of life and not necessarily our quantity of life, we seem to be less willing to take risk. And this new discipline of pain medicine is really advocating for greater responses to the losses of quality of life and quantity of life. And I'm not sure that the government really has made a clear statement that we can articulate for you at this time as to exactly how much risk they're willing to accept.
Chip,
we certainly don't want to harm anyone.
Of course.
Yeah.
Chip, we wish you good luck, and thank you very much for the phone call.
All right, thank you.
We're talking about pain management. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I wanted to ask you another question, and this, we mentioned opiates before and opioids, the drugs like OxyContin. There is a new concern by some pain specialists that the FDA may decide to prosecute doctors who, in their view, prescribe too much of these drugs.
Well, there was just a case last week where a physician was found guilty on federal charges of over-prescribing, really found guilty for drug trafficking. And there are a lot of details of this case that haven't completely surfaced, and it was certainly a very, very extreme practice. The question in this case was the work that this doctor was doing part of the sanctioned practice of medicine, or did it go beyond the scope of practice in medicine, and did he leave medicine and now was a drug dealer? He argued that he was doing the best by his patients, and these are patients who didn't get help anywhere else, and he was just trying hard to help them. His practice may not have been sanctioned widely by the mainstream medical community, but the question in his case was that they didn't prosecute him by taking his license away and through civil processes. They charged him criminally, and that's really where I think the debate is raging now as to what is the risk that a doctor takes in treating pain aggressively, and we're concerned that the average doctor may not want to take the steps that are necessary to treat pain, even though the doctors who have been prosecuted have really been out on the extremes of practice, well beyond what most of us would ever experience in normal practice. So the concern here is that there would be a chilling effect on doctors wanting to treat pain because of fear of sanctions. And we sure hope that doesn't happen, and we're doing a lot of work now to reassure doctors that it's safe to treat pain. And in fact, it may be equally unsafe to not treat pain. As you may know, there have been civil cases against physicians for under-treating pain, and several physicians have been charged successfully with elder abuse for under-treating pain in cancer patients.
Has the we just have a minute or so left, but I did want to ask, has the FDA been clear enough about what it considers excessive and what it considers within the realms of that's okay?
Well, the FDA, I'm not sure, is the organization that handles the question you're asking. I think it's the DEA. The DEA is the
Drug Enforcement Agency.
Yes, is the organization that handles enforcing abuse problems with drugs that come under the Controlled Substances Act, and that is something that's in flux right now. The DEA previously said that they would not use the amount of drug used as a guide for whether someone has been a physician or a clinician has been excessive in their practice, but recently they backed away from that and in an interim statement said that in fact the amount of drug may in fact be a sole entity in which they judge inappropriate practice. So this is in flux. I think the field would say that how much you give somebody is not in and of itself a very good measure.
Okay.
But this is a hot area right now.
Scott Fishman, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Scott Fishman, president-elect of the American Academy of Pain Medicine. He joined us by phone from his office at the University of California at Davis. When we come back, a new biography of Howard Hughes, Aviator. This is Talk of the Nation, NPR News.